Welcome to another season of Fit to Teach, where every week we provide evidence-based health and wellness information to support teachers and school employees on their wellness journey. My name is Kyle Pfaffenbach. I'm an associate professor of health and human performance at Eastern Oregon University and the director of the EOU Lab for Exercise Assessment and Performance, which we call the LEAP. I'm joined by LEAP intern Cole Jorgensen, this year's LEAP intern. You guys will remember Nathan from last year and Anya from the year before. So Cole is carrying the mantle. What's up, Cole?
What's up? How are you doing?
Good. For Fit to Teach, each week we provide a summary of a research paper that provides insights into some aspect of health and wellness, and we also suggest an achievable action item that teachers and staff can focus on for the week. The goal is that by trying these activities throughout each week, that healthy habits will accumulate and you can find out what health and wellness activities are a good fit for you. So let's get into it. Cole, you read the paper. First of all, how are you doing?
I'm doing good. I'm a little nervous. It's my first podcast, but we're grinding through it.
We're grinding through it.
And I'm happy to be here talking about a pretty interesting topic with an expert like yourself.
Look at you. You give a, that's a perfect segue. And so you're doing great. This is great. So I think, you know, last year, so 2 years ago when we did these episodes with Anya, we really focused on papers we focused on topics and then we had papers and things like that. Last year, we just sort of like chatted about topics and things like that. I think, you know, for the population that we're trying to reach, these are evidence-based individuals. They want to know where information is coming from. They want to know the information that can be trusted. And I think that's actually really important. So I'm glad we're kind of getting back this year to the roots of looking at papers. And when I say papers, I mean peer-reviewed research articles. Most of the time, the topics that we're going to be discussing are covered in what are called review papers. So review papers are where you take a bunch of studies, like an expert in the field of whatever we're talking about, if it's sleep, if it's exercise, if it's weightlifting, whatever it is. They take a whole bunch of studies that have been done in that area and kind of put them together and synthesize them in a way that gives us kind of an overall picture of the state of the field. And then what we'll try and do is present some of the main things about why we like the paper, why we didn't like the paper, some of the information that like kind of stood out to us that we think is important to share. But I also think like our challenge and one of the things that will make this like useful for people to listen to is if they can get like actual things they can do about out they can do out of it, not just here's a bunch of information and good luck.
Right.
So I want to make sure that we focus on that, like boiling it down. I can already tell it's going to go really well because I'm looking at Cole's notes and they're extensive. So okay, so what's the paper that we're working that we're talking about today? So this is a and I'm trying to see, was this a 24 paper? No, it's a 2025 paper. So this is a really recent paper. It is in a journal called the OMB Integrative and Complementary Medicine Journal. It is an original research project that is really a qualitative research study. So the in the topic and in the title of the paper is called Teachers on Self-Care. This is out of a group called Wyndham Central Supervisory Union, which is a group out of Vermont that is engaged in teacher wellness and understanding or interested in understanding what teachers need to be their best and also have like sustainable and happy careers. And I think this is a very common, when you go through and you look at the background research on this stuff, one of the most common things we see across you know, surveys and just feedback that we get from conversations with teachers is that burnout's very real. Stress is very real. They have a lot of what in the literature they call compassion fatigue. And one of the ways to kind of try and reduce the chances of becoming burned out, to continue to enjoy and have passion towards the career that you're in, is to practice what is generally called self-care or taking care of yourself. And I think this is really critical because people that have dedicated their careers, they dedicated their lives to helping others. They, one of the things that is common amongst them is that they oftentimes put their own personal needs way, way on the back burner, and they put everybody else and the needs of everyone around them. And that can include their family, their extended family, as well as their students, and then their admin and their union, and they forget to take care of themselves. And I think that one of the most important things to realize is that taking care of yourself is not selfish. Taking care of yourself is not forgetting the needs of others. And in fact, it is part of becoming a better servant or teacher or mentor. You have to take care of yourself so that you can show up in a good place and in a good way for the people that you are serving. And I think essentially this is evidence, and this paper does a really good job of kind of showing that, I thought.
I agree. And I think self-care is only becoming more important, I guess, from reading the paper. Burnout and stress and job satisfaction are at an all-time low, and it's getting worse from the sounds of it. And I don't know if that's post-COVID or whatever else, but I think this is extremely important. And just from being a student and going or having teachers throughout my life, like, I realized that when teachers are coming to the workplace in a good mood and happy and care about what they're talking about, it's a lot easier to be in class and be aware of what's going on and learn from them. And like, I'd see all my teachers as role models, and I think that's huge. Without self-care, like, they're not going to be at their best potential. And I think that should be taking priority over a lot.
Yeah, I think that, you know, and again, it's just one of those things where you think like, well, I don't have time. I'm busy. I have to do these other things. I have these other commitments. I have to come through for all these people. And the reality is you'll be more effective at doing that if you kind of take some time and step back and take care of yourself. And that's sort of like, I think people can generally understand that, but let's, like, when you look at that question academically, I think the paper does a really good job with their introduction and their background, talking about, and, you know, I think that, you know, when you were talking about this seems to be getting worse and I don't know a lot, there's two possibilities there. One is like, you're becoming more aware of it and cognizant of it, and other people may be like stopping and realizing this. So it's something they've always known, but they haven't actually thought about. And so now it seems like it's everywhere. It's like one of those things where you learn something new and you start seeing it everywhere, and you're like, is that a coincidence, or have I always been seeing it everywhere, but I just didn't know what it was? And so that's like an important aspect of this. And part of this podcast, part of the mission of it is to just make people aware of these things. So they can put some sort of structure around what they've already been feeling for a long time. So I think that's important. And one of the things that I liked about the approach that they took with the paper is, you know, from a scientific standpoint, when we start thinking about problems, we want to be able to characterize them. We want to be able to break them down. We want to be able to name them. We want to have definitions around them. And this paper, I would encourage people to go and check it out. We'll link it in the description for the podcast so that you can access that. It's a free open source paper. And one of the things that they did was they talked about this thing called the social ecological model, which has been around for a really long time. But what I like about it is that it sort of clearly states the different aspects that go into making a person feel cared for and for having self-care. So basically they talk at the broadest level, there's policy. So I'm sure a policy that would make all teachers feel more cared for is if they just got paid more. for example. So that's what we mean when we talk about policy. And then there's organizational, there's an organizational bubble that's kind of below that. So in terms of like you're playing within the rules of what have been set up by the legislature, you're also subject to the rules and policies at your specific place of employment. And then you get the three that we kind of usually associate more with self-care, because we typically can have more control over these things. One is community, one is interpersonal, so your relationships with others, and then individual relationships and the things that you're doing with yourself. And the paper does a really good job of explaining these. Were there any of those things that kind of jumped out at you?
Yeah, I think like there was a quote from the paper where like all five of the subjects of the actual study like mentioned self-care. We need first, in order to have proper self-care, we need a community or we need multiple people. It just can't be one person. And so I think that's super important. Finding people that we can relate to and have things in common with, if that's at the workplace or if that's at home, whatever else. So I think that's extremely important, is developing like a community that we can share what's going, like what's going on in our lives with and whatnot.
Yeah, I mean, I think that the you know, when you think about self-care as an individual endeavor, if you only put it on yourself, it can become another like stressor,
right?
Which is this overwhelming thing, and it's one more thing that you're expected to do. It's one more thing that you, whereas when you talk about self-care in terms of interpersonal, so that's your relationships with others and how you support the people around you and how the people support you, as well as community in terms of like what are the things broader around those individual relationships, how is that supporting you in your self-care, those things can go a long way. And those things are not always in all our control, but there are aspects of both those things that are in our control. Either the way we're working with other people, the way that we're trying to support other people, and then the way that they're supporting us in turn. And I know we, as a department here, the Health and Human Performance Department just had their first department meeting, and you know, this was a new thing for me, but I'm department chair now. And one of the things I did is I just sat down with our group and said, like, I asked everybody to reflect on three questions. One is, what does or would make you excited to come to work every day? Two, what is one to two things that your colleagues here maybe don't know about what you need to be happy in your work and feel more supported in your work? And then three, what is your idea of success within our department? Not like what the president has said, not what the legislature has said, not what students tell you, not what. And it generated a bunch of like just really open, honest, and interesting conversations. And so, you know, this can be done with your department cohort. It can be done at your teachers union meeting. It can be done with the people on your floor. It can be done with, but I think it really boils down in a lot of ways to those three questions. What, you know, that way when people know that and people want to be happy with their work and they want to support the people that are at their work, if they know what you value and what you need, they're more likely to be sensitive to those things, and because now they're more aware of it.
100%. Yeah. And I think a big like theme too was like when you're like in a good mood and coming to work excited and passionate about what you're teaching, like you're building a rapport with your students too, and you're like having that connection with your students and them realizing kind of where you're at and you realizing where they're at. I mean, like teachers have to deal with the emotions of hundreds of different kids every year. And I can't personally imagine what kind of toll that takes. So really like building that connection with your students and having like their voice being like having their voice being heard, is extremely important. And I think the best way to go about that is with self-care and getting yourself right before you're coming to work so we can have that. So.
Yeah, some of those, some of that is, are you individually in a place where you can come work to then have good interpersonal relationships, which then will affect your community, which then hopefully can influence in a positive way your organization and policy. So the kind of structure of that can work up and down. And, you know, like, as cliche as it sounds, like, momentum can work in both directions. Like, when you're in a negative environment, it seems to get worse and worse and worse. And, but when you take steps to improve that, it starts to get better and better and better. And those things can be, I think, really important. So, Cole, you alluded to the individuals that were focused on in the study. So one of the things that the study did, this is a qualitative study, so there wasn't a lot of like quantitative numbers and data and, you know, this many percentage and this effectiveness and all that type of stuff. Really, what the authors did was that they identified five different people that are in five different places in their teaching career, and then they asked them and interviewed them and did questions around their self-care at each one of these levels, the policy level, the organizational level, the community level, the interpersonal level, and then the individual level. And I thought, you know, for teachers that are interested in this, go in and check out the paper. We won't go too much into kind of just breaking down the sort of details of each person, but were there things that stood out to you in terms of reading basically a summary of the interview of the five teachers that they focused on?
Yeah, there was some common themes that like a lot of them agreed on. So like I have all teachers in the study express self-care as a positive benefit in their lives and is essential for educators to help reduce stress and be at their best states at work, which is a significant finding of the study. So, I mean, every participant of the study agreed upon that and the importance of self-care. I know another common theme was early on in people's careers, it's more of a challenge. They found it more of a challenge to practice self-care. They mentioned there's almost this like stigma that we're like, if you're a first year teacher, you need to work extra hours. You need to like earn your place. So I found it interesting, especially for like early in their career teachers, like how that plays into their lives and how they can like find balance doing that in this kind of like unwritten rule of you got to show up, you got to prove yourself.
Right. And one of the things that jumped out at me were some of the people said that they take mental health days, but almost all of them said there was some sort of like guilt or like it was somehow subversive or it was somehow like bad behavior to take mental health days. And that's something that from like a policy and organizational standpoint, if enough people are saying, hey, there are times when I have to take a step back and I come back feeling so much better and so much more charged. And even if you can't do that during the week, I know a lot of teachers and professors and a lot of professionals that work too much on the weekends and they don't protect some of those things because they think, I have to get this done. I have to get this done. And the reality is that like you be more effective and get more things done during the week if you take some time to step back and recharge.
Absolutely. And I think another thing that was unanimously agreed upon is the need for boundaries between school life, work life, and home life. Mm-hmm. And I think that's huge. Like there has to be a boundary there. We can't like, there needs to be a break from work when we come home and just time to for ourselves to get ourselves right. And I, that was very evident in this paper that the importance of that.
Yeah. I mean, some of the things that, and Cole has like an incredible athletic background. A lot of you listening will know him, from his sports accolades, but he's a better student than athlete, if you can believe that. And, so he, but this happens in sports too, where like, if you're overtrained, the last thing you want to do is push harder. And I think for a lot of young athletes and a lot of young people, and this trickles into then our professional career, You're just told like winners don't take days off and you have to grind all the time and you have to do all this stuff. And the reality is like, if you look at the top athletes, like LeBron is my favorite athlete. He literally says, for me to be my best for the people that are relying on me, I protect my time. I take naps every day. I protect my sleep. These are non-negotiables because that's how I show up best for everyone. And that guy's got a lot going on.
Yeah.
And absolutely. So, and you know, Cole played baseball and you hear a lot of baseball players talk about stuff like this where, man, it is such a relief when you kind of have a coach, for example, when you say, coach, like, I think I need a day off, or I think I need a day at a different position. And you're not afraid that coach is going to say, what are you talking about? You know, when you build that trust, and again, that comes to that community and that organization level where everyone's encouraging everyone to take care of themselves. And that's going to cause this scenario where everyone could rise and everyone could be at their kind of best more often, basically.
Yeah, absolutely. And I know like the paper even referenced like school boards refraining from using their days off as like sick days or personal days and reframing it as like absent days. Like even that helped with like not feeling that guilt or that kind of old school mentality, like I gotta just deal with it, like just keep pushing through. Right. Like it's that I think we're kind of in an era where we're trying to start getting out of that mentality a little bit and realizing like, no, we like gotta take some time to help ourselves and get right. And
right.
Like, there's no way you can be the best you can be for your students if you're not taking that time to.
And I guess from like an application standpoint, it doesn't mean you just automatically, everyone just needs to refuse to show up to work for a week.
Right. Yeah.
It's more of like, if this is planted in your head and this is something that you're thinking about, and because some of you are sitting here potentially, I'm thinking about if I were listening to this, what are some potential responses? So like one response is like, yeah, that all sounds great in theory, but there's just no way I could do it. Or there's just no way in the way my class is this year, or my department is this year, that I can take any time off. Or, yeah, like I was supposed to try and recharge this summer, but it ended up being really busy because I was like getting ready for a new curriculum change or something like that. Or we lost a bunch of teachers or... Those things are always going to be there. It's how well you can learn in very smally at first, but to set some like very clear boundaries and then not, you know, even if you do feel bad about it first, if you make yourself do it and you see that the sky doesn't actually fall and the whole place doesn't crumble, that then says, oh, you know, I feel better and all this bad stuff I thought was going to happen didn't happen. Or maybe some bad stuff did happen, but I was able to deal with it. And I was better equipped to deal with it because I created a little breathing room. And I just think this is like really, really important. You know, moving on just real quick, there were some clear themes that emerged from their literature review as well as their... interviews with the teachers and this qualitative work that they did. So basically, just to kind of blow through these really quickly, self-care was seen as beneficial. You know, one of the teachers said, when she practices self-care, she's less stressed and exhausted. It benefits the students. She said, I think trickling down, it is benefiting them. I think if I'm less stressed, I'm less exhausted, I'm a better teacher, I'm more able to reflect on what I'm doing. So it's just a lot of like really good little nuggets like that from people that are actually in the game. So
yeah,
the need for self-care is absolutely acknowledged. Boundaries, Cole already mentioned, was an important theme, and that can be really hard. And then in terms of like, from an individual standpoint and also potentially from an interpersonal standpoint, what are some things that you can do? And this gets to the application part of it. There were some clear things that kind of stood out. Time in nature, which is something we have amazing natural areas here in La Grande. And I mean, this I know is one of my favorite things of living in Le Grand, and one of the most important things. You know, when I moved, I came here from USC Medical School, started teaching at EOU, and I like to say it was like both metaphorically and literally a breath of fresh air, because I had a little bit more breathing room. There's less population, there's less hustle bustle, there's less complications, and there's just incredible outdoor resources. So time in nature, exercise, which of course we are proponents of. And for those of you that want to, you know, begin, continue, assess your current exercise journey, we offer, you know, your wellness initiatives at your school subsidize you to be able to come into our lab and do all kinds of health assessments and things like all the equipment that's back here. It can look scary, but it's not scary. And it can give you a lot of really good information about, you know, ways to sort of understand, you know, what's happening to your body when you're going on a walk, what happens when you go on a run, those sorts of things. We also practice mindful breathing. We have biofeedback machines that show you the impact of that. I know, particularly when Scott Carpenter, the assistant superintendent, talks about, shout out to Scott, he makes all this happen. And when he came in and did his testing, I think he had a 6-fold reduction in our biofeedback metric for stress with 5 minutes of mindful breathing.
That's insane.
Yeah. So pets was another one. You know, lack of self-care at the beginning of teaching, barriers and obstacles to self-care was like discussed. And then the book does a really good job of listing things in tables that are really tied back to that socioeconomical model or ecological model, not economic. Were there things in the tables that jumped out at you?
So we already touched on exercise and pets. But yeah, I think the time in nature is extremely, like, everybody that was interviewed said time in nature helped them in some way, shape, or form. And I think if it's even just like a 20-minute walk after work every day to just kind of take a step back and breathe a little bit, I think is huge. And I guess to take a step back a little bit, like, there was one participant of the study, this person's name was Kai, but like, there's a quote that I really enjoyed. Like, this person said, our class will survive and get through without a rigid schedule and lesson plans, but they would not get through it without a happy and joyful teacher. And I think that is 100% true. I've, throughout my learning experience, and I'm sure throughout yours as well, there's always been times where you'll walk into a classroom and it'll be death by PowerPoint, and you can tell the teacher doesn't really want to be there, and that doesn't make you want to be there or engaged. And when I come into a room and I can tell the teacher truly cares, like, that they're there and they're happy to be there, and I feel like I'm beating a dead horse a little bit, but like, it's such a big, like, deal for the students to see and engage with. Like, it's a game changer.
Do you have memories of that at all levels, not just at college? I mean, the last couple years. Okay.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, it's at every grade I've been through, there's been, I mean, and everybody has bad days, and that's going to happen.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting about this, because like, I think there's a way to do this regardless of what your default personality is.
Right.
If that makes sense. Like, it's not always about being, what I've noticed is not always about being a chirping optimist. Like, where you just, even when things suck, it's okay to say, like, hey, this kind of sucks right now. But now, little kids may not understand the context of that. But it's also like, I'm still showing up here. I'm going to bring the best of what I have to offer to the table today. And, you know, as long as that energy gets matched by you all, we're going to have a productive day. And I think, especially when you get into the older, you know, there's just so many interesting challenges mostly high school and college kids are the ones I work with, but I have two little kids, and I know that, just working with that variety of personalities and trying to stay positive over a long school year is just, you guys are heroes.
Yeah. And I, so Kyle kind of pet or stroked my ego a little bit, but like he's a very enthusiastic professor, and I can say that coming to his class every day is a breath of fresh air. Like I, like it's very, like I am 100% engaged, and I'm curious, and I wanted to ask you what self-care routines you go through to keep your positive attitude. And
that's a good question.
And have the energy you do throughout the day.
Yeah. I mean, this is really interesting because this is an ongoing, well, I think it's interesting because, and I'm talking about myself, so it might be a little self-serving, but for me, you know, exercise is really important. Sleep is really important. And at some point, I realized that you can never get everything done that you want to get done. So you have to get done. I've gotten better at prioritizing things that I can get done in the time that I have in an efficient way. And do that kind of to the best of my ability within certain boundaries. And I cross those boundaries a lot. The last two nights I've been on my laptop till 10:30.
Yeah.
Like, you know,
it's gonna happen.
And I can feel it because I'm not at my, you know,
exactly. Like, yeah.
I'm not at my best. And the other thing I've done, one, I think exercise really helps. Two, I think like not always feeling pressure to like learn and be productive really helps. So like I listen to a lot of audiobooks that are just fun audiobooks. They're not like learning audiobooks. And then three, I go to therapy every week. And we have really good benefits here at EOU, and I'm really happy with those. And I found like an awesome therapist that I really look forward to, because one of the things, even if you're not, one of the things that I've noticed is there's some good strategies for delaying stress. So things that are weighing on you, if you know you get to unload those at some point, they don't seem as stressful, or you don't feel this pressure to solve everything immediately when you're having that feeling. And so a lot of times, you know, I actually had a friend who had a therapist named Sally. And she would always say, save it for Sally. And it was like so I think having that, like, you know, and different people find that in different places. Some find it in religion, some find it with prayer, some find it with partners. But for me particularly, I found that having like a completely objective party that is not, you know, doesn't love me, doesn't live with me, isn't related to me, hasn't been my friend for a long time, that I can not unload on them, but express some of these like genuine things that I'm feeling and reflecting on, has just been super, super helpful. So that's how I, you know, it's funny. We talk about how, like, you know, we're on a 9-month contract as well. And every year things get so busy, and I get to the point where I say, this is unsustainable, and I'm not going to feel bad at any point this summer for taking time off. I'm going to fish. I'm going to run. I'm going to lift. I'm going to take care of my house. I'm going to do all these things I don't get to do, when things are super busy. And that lasts about a week. And then I'm like, man, you're not productive. You got to start trying to, and that's like what I work on. So
absolutely.
You know, this is an ongoing process, but for me, recognizing that, I can only show up for the people that are counting on me when I'm rested, have good nutrition, and get regular exercise. And I'm actively pursuing aspects of my mental wellness. So that's how I kind of try and, you know, that's how I kind of try and do it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's awesome. Yeah.
So, you know, we're going to wrap up here. We're almost at 35 minutes. I think this is a really cool discussion. If you want to learn more about the paper, go check it out. We'll link it in the description. One of the last things I'll just say is that there's the tables at the back. have all these like really good, both kind of actionable solutions that may be right for you, and also other obstacles that you may not see as obstacles, but they actually are. And once you recognize them as obstacles, you can either like accept them, ignore them, or try and do something to change them. And so it's things like rigors of teaching, absorbing student needs, making thousands of decisions a day, considering the needs of stakeholders, cumbersome professional development, anticipating violence, evaluations, curriculum shifts, documentation, lack of respect. It, you know, everyone is probably sitting there nodding to at least some of those. And it can be relieving and interesting to kind of find out, you know, that other people are looking into this and studying it and trying to find ways to help this community. And that's also why we're here.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I think if we could boil this down, you know, try and put yourself, try and take care of your personal needs and get in touch with what you do need. No one can tell you what you value and what you do need. You know, try and, in a non-stressful way, try and get good nutrition, good sleep, and get some physical activity, take some breaks, even if it's a time when you would normally like catch up on emails or something like that. Maybe go for a brisk walk or something like that. Spend time in nature, spend time with loved ones, have conversations, with your colleagues about what, so that you can share what you need to be happy at work and feel supported at work, and what they need to be happy and supported at work. Because the reality is like, when we don't have those conversations, we tell ourselves stories about what's going on in other people's heads. And a lot of times those can create negative tension.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Okay. Cool. All right. So thanks for listening to Fit to Teach, where we provide insights into health and wellness for teachers, staff each week. We'll see you next week with another paper and another topic. A couple things that I want to kind of share with everyone. One, we're now going to be posting these podcasts onto YouTube. So right now we have a, what the kids would say, a mid webcam. And apparently I wasn't clear enough about the fact that we were going to be on YouTube. So Cole doesn't feel like he's...
Sorry about my attire today.
He doesn't feel like he's dressed up enough. So yeah, so and I said, this will be good. Like we can evolve. We can learn from it. So I think you look fine. You know, we're starting up this year's round of teacher health explorations, and that's where teachers can come in and take advantage of all the lovely equipment that we have here. So we can do biofeedback, we can talk about breathing techniques, we can put you on the what's called a VO2 machine and find out how many calories you need in a day. We can have a talk about nutrition. There's just a lot of cool insight that we can do for that. We're going to continue to bring you these podcasts, as well as our podcast channel, Leap Into Wellness Network, also hosts the Turning Point podcast with Brett Smith and Scott Carpenter, where they focus on like specific teacher aspects and people within the district. So we hope that you tune in this season and that you enjoy these and that you listen to them and that you share these with your colleagues and your other teacher friends, whether they're in our district or not. And we're really committed to like serving this community, serving the teachers in the community, and trying to bring you all really kind of just supportive and valuable information.
Yeah. Yeah. Thanks for having me on and bearing with me through my first time doing
first
this.
Podcast.
Yeah.
And I love it. Yeah. This is great. Topic, so you did great. All right. Sounds good. So we'll see you next week. Thanks.